welcome to Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter from Bob Tarte's Kitty Cornered, How Franny and Five Other Incorrigible Cats Seized Control of Our House and Made It Their Home. And if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to start today's reading with Bob Tarte's Kitty Cornered. In the last chapter, we learned that Franny and Agnes could not find it in their kitty hearts to be friends. Instead, they took turns chasing each other up a tree or standing guard over their territory on the porch. After 9 days, the river had finally gotten the whole flooding business out of its system. That was the first night that I hadn't locked the ducks and hens in the back of the barn and made them listen to the talk radio shows about the benefits of investing in gold. We were watching the Beverly Hillbillies, waiting for guest stars Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs to perform their song Pearl, Pearl, Pearl. Just as Lester picked up his guitar and commenced picking, Agnes cannonballed out from under the rocking chair at Franny. But instead of fleeing back to her cardboard box on the porch, Franny discovered a whole new second story of life when she charged Agnes and chased her up the stairs. Alas, Franny's entry into this higher realm was brief. Agnes installed herself as the fighting duchess of the upstairs, and in the days that followed successfully repelled further incursion. Gone was her truce with the other two cats, though. Her fanged threats had no impact on Mubi. Completely ignoring Agnes, Mubi trudged up the carpeted steps every morning and ensconced herself on my office chair. I felt bad about the situation. Dark, dour Agnes only lit up when she was outdoors. I hated to see her deprived of fresh air except for snips through a window screen, and she couldn't harass a chipmunk, not unless it was hopping onto the keyboard to send an email. But she was much safer upstairs than she could have ever been outdoors, with a busy road in front of the house and a bear in the back. I wouldn't have continued to let Franny out if being cooped up didn't make her so despondent. Outdoors, Franny let her triumph over Agnes go to her head. One Friday afternoon, Linda's driver, Gwen, dropped her off at the twice-a-week visit to the chiropractor. As Linda was gathering up her pillows, purse, and backrest from the Gwen's backseat, Franny trotted up to the car that was idling in front of our mailbox and whacked the rear tire with her paw to show who it was that was boss. A week later, my accountant, Mike, drove up in his 1,000-foot-long motorhome, mobile office, unwound a yellow extension cord that was as thick as a fire hose, and dimmed the lights of everyone on our power grid as he plugged it into our porch. Balanced in a doll-sized swivel chair on the passenger side, I recited figures to Mike for my belated tax return as he sat across the aisle in front of a PC, a laptop, a printer, a copier, an electric stapler, and several small appliances. "Well, now, there's a cat in here," he said blandly, peering at me over his half-glasses. I swiveled in time to see Franny scamper down the aisle, exit, and streak across the lawn. "Want a cat?" I asked as I shut the door to keep her out. "No, thank you." "Then you'd better check all the rooms in here before you leave." Though the floodwaters had receded, our mice had pledged their loyalty to our home turf. When Linda started up her new car, a boxy Scion XB that we referred to as the bread truck, she was nearly blinded by a flare of check engine lights. "Maybe a slice of rye bread got stuck in the alternator," I suggested. "Whatever's wrong, it's under warranty," she said. Or so we assumed. The service manager informed her that an O2 sensor devoured by mice wasn't covered and could cost us $500 to replace. Checking the web, I discovered that damage to vehicles by rodents was a widespread problem and that the manufacturers of automotive electrical components apparently colluded with them. The O2 sensors were being coated in a toasty, tasty, soy-based material instead of plastic. After helping themselves to scratch, feed, sunflower seed, and duck pellets, they that abounded in our yard, the mice had enjoyed this exotic change of pace. Either that or they were getting their revenge against the person who had trapped them. I was glad that Linda had let the bear alone. It seemed like any other Sunday morning when I opened the porch door for the winner of the war between the cats, held it and held it while she hesitated and then watched her skitter down from the front steps. "How about you earn your keep for once?" I called. When she turned and looked back at me with the flattened ears, I explained, "Keep the mice from our cars." My check engine light had come on shortly after Linda's, and I was starting to worry. Normally, I never let Franny out until after lunch, but ecstatically singing birds, shockingly bright sunshine, and a silver mist across the grass made me want to bolt outside barefoot, and I was sure that Franny felt the same way. Before she disappeared behind the monster pine, she slowed down and shot me a glance, as if inviting me to follow. I felt at an apprehension as Lucy oozed past me in the manner of a sluggish liquid rather than a surging force. I fought the urge to call Franny back, just because this wasn't the way we usually did things. It probably wouldn't have made any difference if I had kept her inside for another few hours, but for weeks I blamed myself for what happened next. Lucy didn't venture the 20 feet out into the yard that it would have taken to guard the vehicles. She stuck close to the house, as if it were magnetically attached, rubbing up against the foundation while she rounded the corner and flopping down in Linda's iris bed for a nap. Even though she was no better at responding when we called her to come back than Franny was, we never had to search very far for her. She meowed at the side door after dinner time, afraid of missing out on her evening teaspoonful of canned cat food. I had an especially greasy chunk of chicken dark meat for Franny. She should have been able to smell it from the woods as I stepped out the back door with her treat plate in hand. "Chicken, Franny," I said quietly, almost superfluously. Her pattern was to rocket up the door, stopping only when she got within a foot of stepping inside and pretending to be gripped by indecision until I set down the plate. But I called and called and called, and she didn't show. "She'd better not have run away," I told Linda as it started to get dark. My biggest concern about Franny was that she would tire of mundane domestic life and hit the trail again. "She'd better not think that she can stay out all night." "She's way too independent lately," I said. "She does anything she wants." I marched down the neighbor's driveway, shouting her name in increasing anger that didn't exactly invite a response. From the riverbank, I heard the back door slam and Linda hollering for her. We met back inside without the car, but as I sat down on the couch to grouse about the ungrateful Franny, Linda went out again and came in quickly. "I found her," she said. "She's lying out in the weeds in front of the barn. Something's wrong with her. She can't stand up, and she's got a big gash in her leg." Chapter 9. Out of the Weeds. The pet owners in the waiting room at the emergency clinic had the stricken look of refugees. Their faces were pale and pulled low with an expression of hopelessness that I hadn't seen since the last time I'd gotten my driver's license renewed. A tube television tuned to CNN headline news that had been bolted to the wall to prevent us from slipping it into our pockets. It let us measure the length of our stay by the number of times we watched the story of a man in China who refused to move out of his apartment as a construction crew demolished the building around him. It was exactly how I felt as an injured Franny lay motionless in a pet carrier next to me. The check-in had proceeded smoothly. I explained how Linda had carried Franny onto the porch, how she had cried and collapsed when we tried to stand her on her feet, and how she had been pretty much out of it ever since. After producing a credit card and the deed to our house, I was told that the emergency vet would see me right away. That meant I could expect to be here all night. I deduced from the pacing figures with cell phones in the parking lot. To my surprise, within 20 minutes, which was a mere eye blink by waiting room standards, a vet assistant whooshed through a swinging door and called Franny's name. My only previous experience with an emergency animal clinic had been abysmal. A loud, oafish DVM handled our sick bunny roughly, which had led me to conclude that late shift vets were the dregs of the profession who couldn't hack it in during prime time. Dr. Fitzroy was bright, young, and inspired such calming confidence that when she suggested Franny needed an X-ray to make sure that her spinal wasn't damaged, I didn't immediately consider shuffling off and hanging myself. That could wait until later. Back in the waiting room, I snapped open my phone and talked in the hushed tones to Linda. I watched the Chinese apartment dweller defy the local authorities from his crumbling tower a few more times. The weary boredom was therapeutic. It kept me from agonizing over Franny. Time slowed even more as Dr. Fitzroy clipped the first of two x-rays to the light box. I steeled myself for the worst, or would have, if I hadn't any steel inside of me. She pointed to a faint pair of streaks across white bone and said, "Her pelvis is fractured in two places." "How serious is that?" "It should heal on its own without a cast if you keep her still for a few weeks, but that isn't the only problem." She hung the second film next to the first and explained that Franny's hind leg was dislocated. "Normally, with a dislocated leg, we reposition it and pop it back into place, but we can't do that with Franny without shattering the fractured pelvis." "So what do we do? Will she have to have surgery?" "You probably don't have to do anything. Cat's legs' muscles are strong enough that they'll form a false joint over time. It's really amazing, but it works because their bodies are so light. It shouldn't present any issue, though she may limp a little." "What do you think happened to cause this?" I asked and repeated the story of how Linda had found her in the weeds in the front of the barn. "There's no way to know," she said, jotting notes on Franny's chart. "She could have fallen from a tree. From the gash on her leg, she might have been clipped by a car. If that's what happened, she's probably lucky. Most cats that get hit by cars have much more serious external injuries." I could tell by her tone of voice that Franny wasn't out of the woods just yet. "We don't know if she has internal injuries. I see that her regular vet is Dr. Zeeman. Take her there in a couple of days for a follow-up. Let her rest until then and try to get her to eat." She handed me a plastic bag stuffed with syringes so thin that resembled lollipop sticks. "This is for the pain. Give her one 3 times a day. Another bag of syringes materialized. She needs this antibiotic 2 times a day. Keep the wound on her leg clean. I shuddered to think of once again having to give medication to Franny, who disliked being handled under the best of conditions. As I looked at her with concern, she fixed her eyes on mine and gave me the long, slow blink that a cat only gives to people that it loves. She had never done anything like that before. That blink coursed through my optical nerves, pausing briefly at the tear ducts before settling my whole body aglow. If Dr. Fitzroy noticed my phosphorescence, she was too polite to mention it. Back home, we pulled the lid off Franny's cardboard carton and set it on the porch floor, positioned her favorite pillow on top of it, and gently slid her out of the pet carrier. She lay flat and exhausted, but sufficiently awake to swallow her meds. Then I tilted her head back and gave her the medication through the syringe. Outdoors, a tree frog repeated a mournful note. I went to bed with a strange sense of elation. Franny's accident had swept aside everything comfortable in my tiny world. I worried that she had suffered internal injuries and that the knowledge she was in pain clung to me like a ringing in my ears. But I still felt filled with light. The spark of love that had passed between us was once in a lifetime gift. I woke up early, hoping to find a greatly improved Franny, who was essentially her old self, though unable to walk. But she was nearly comatose. "She won't eat," I told Linda, as I teetered on the edge of our bed, sipping coffee from an original American Kazoo Company of Eden, New York coffee mug. Both our dubious daily word and you better believe it calendars focused on medically grotesque subjects, so I set them aside. I tried chicken, I tried tuna from a brand new can. I even heated up a dollop of bits of liver and tempted her with it on my fingers. She wouldn't touch a thing. "You can't expect her to be hungry when she's in pain," Linda said. That wasn't what I wanted to hear. I would have welcomed some resistance when I daubed the stitched-up gash in her leg with betadine, and when I pried her mouth open to dose her with her pharmaceutical. She complained with an alarmingly weak rendition of her usual squeak. These should have been 2-person jobs, but my vacant self proved sufficient. By evening, she continued to decline. "I think we're going to lose her," I said. "There must be some damage inside." Showing my characteristic lack of good sense, I trudged out to the porch before bedtime and blubbered my goodbye. For once, I could pet her as much as I wanted. When she lifted her head to peer at me through the cloudy eyes, I didn't know whether she was acknowledging my messy farewell or asking me to stop. It seemed like a miserable irony that a cat who had survived on her own outdoors for months should perish in the process of becoming domesticated. I could have locked her inside and tried to ignore the pacing from door to door and the flitting from window to window just to catch a whiff of the sweet world beyond our walls. But her unhappiness would have worn me down. I could have at least kept her in until after lunch for all the difference that would have made. Fate had robbed her of years of chasing Agnes up a tree, turning up her nose at one canned cat food product after another, and evading my touch. The next morning she had slipped so far into the bottomless pit of oblivion that it seemed cruel to force more meds down her. Linda made an appointment with Dr. Zimmerman to see if anything could be done, including euthanizing her, if necessary. I took the morning off from work. She perked up a little by the time I hauled her carrier into Dr. Zimmerman's office. With a cocked head, she glanced around the room and yawned. This small activity was such a huge improvement over her previous comatose state, she might as well have suddenly vaulted up to the ceiling. I wrote off her flicker of wakefulness to my having thumped her over potholed roads between our house and the clinic. Dr. Zimmerman had another interpretation. It's the painkiller, she told me. It's too strong for her. You said you didn't give it to her this morning. They gave us the wrong painkiller, I asked. It was proper for the day of the accident, but I think we should cut back now and switch to one that doesn't sedate her so much. So her painkiller is the problem? I felt my elation surging again. We're not out of the woods yet. Weeds, I wanted to tell her. Out of the weeds. I recommend we do a blood chemistry test to try to make her internal organs to see if they are functioning correctly. She explained how elevated numbers in her blood profile would reveal a problem with her liver, kidneys, or something, but the explanation sailed right past me because I was too busy mentally splashing around in a fountain of optimism. Normally, we would take her into another room for the blood draw, Dr. Zimmerman said, but we don't want to jar her pelvis any more than we have to. So if it disturbs you to watch, you can look away while we take the blood sample right here. I didn't understand what specifically might disturb me, but since I was easily disturbed, I stared at my shoes while Dr. Zimmerman and an assistant went to work. We usually draw blood from the inside rear leg, but we can't do that with Franny. We have to lean her head and shoulders down off the edge of the countertop. I concentrated more intensely on my feet, but Franny didn't utter a sound. Dad, this is one brave cat, she said, making my day a second time, not only with her praise of Franny, but also by addressing me in beatnik lingo. After running the test, she explained that Franny's major organs were like Dreamsville and that the scene should stay cool if she just hung loose. Even though the big-ticket items inside Franny appeared to be undamaged, I was instructed to keep a close eye on her, make sure she eats, and also make sure that sometimes in the next few days she uses her litter box. She'll hold out as long as she can, but she'll eventually use it if everything's all right. But she'll never get to it. She can barely move. Put some kitty litter in a shallow tray and move it close to her bed. Trust me, she'll use it when it comes time. And if she needed a refresher course, I only had to open the porch door and Lucy would march out to show her how it was done. I should have felt great on the drive back home, but the further I traveled from the magnetic center of the Dr. Zimmerman's optimism, the glummer I grew. As my car clicked and popped to a stop in our gravel driveway, I reverted to my usual negative self. I was always a bundle of nerves when one of our animals got sick, and Franny's accident had turned me into one big throbbing synapse. When I delivered the good news to Linda that her injuries probably weren't life-threatening, I managed to make it sound like a death sentence. The way I saw it, I still had a gravely injured cat and no reason to celebrate. We're in trouble if she doesn't use this, I told Linda as she prepared a new litter box for the cat. She needs to eat right now, I said as we surrendered her bed with bowls. She'll be fine. She just needs time to heal, I shushed her when I heard Bill Holmes' voice on the answering machine. I had completely forgotten about the overnight trip to Saginaw that we were supposed to be taking. He must be out of his mind, I said. I can't leave when she's like this. Does he even know about the accident? Mumbling a non-answer, I picked up the phone. After getting the usual informalities out of the way, I told him what had happened to Franny and explained that I was too worried about her to even think of taking a trip. Do you still have Mubi's funnel? My voice cracked in irritation. What good would that do for a fractured pelvis, a dislocated leg, and a possible internal injury? Not for Franny, for you. Before I could complain about him wearing out a joke that I hadn't enjoyed the first time, he asked, remember how deathly ill Zippy was? Yes, I replied, embarrassed that I'd been too absorbed in my own woes to recall that one of his cats had been sick. She was vomiting, he told me. She stopped eating and drinking and looking like she was going to die. I was headed to work for a meeting, and I thought that by the time I got home, Zippy would be dead. She looked so pathetic and small and sad. So I knelt next to her in misery as she lay curled in a circle on a TV room chair, and I said goodbye. But I also emphasized that if she wanted to get better, she had to eat. About 3 hours later, when I came home, I opened the door and she hopped off the chair and wobbled over to meet me. She made me follow her to her food, where she took a few bites. She ate for you, just like that. And then she threw up in the dish. Oh, great. No, it helped. That was the moment she turned the corner, and now she's fine. Cats are such fighters. I peered out in the living room window of Franny's flattened body on the porch. She lay on her side like a pork chop with a slight curve to her spine. I watched her abdomen move in and out as she breathed, which somehow vaguely reassured me that she was still alive. So I just need to tell her that she'll get better. Tell her you're going to go to Nyanquing to look for the yellow blackbird thing. She'll do the rest. Jubilation briefly struck when I ducked through the doorway onto the porch and noticed that the minced chicken on Franny's Delft china saucer had vanished. I started to holler for Linda, but I stifled my excitement as I discovered a second empty plate, which had previously contained a dollop of tuna, and another plate formerly occupied by a lump of canned cat food. Over the 2 days Dr. Ziemann had examined Franny, we had placed these treats in front of her twice a day. Her untouched snacks were providing a bounty for Mubi, Agnes, and Lucy, who slurped up the hours-old but by no means French toast, quality outdated food. A peek into the living room revealed the most likely culprit. Looking more self-satisfied than ever, Lucy avoided my eyes as she licked her chops. The level of kibbles in her bowl hadn't dropped a fraction of an inch since I had replenished it earlier that afternoon. You couldn't wait your turn, I said. Now we'll have to keep the porch door closed. Mubi changed direction when she saw me in the hallway and hurried into the bedroom. So multiple perpetrators might have colluded on the raid. Armed with another round of meats, I did my best to convince Franny to break her fast. It's good, I insisted when she turned her head away. A smudge of tuna on my finger earned a sniff, but no tongue. What are we going to do with you, honey? Balanced on one knee, I scratched her neck and she surprised me by responding with a stretch. Then I heard it. She actually started purring. I stroked her back. We exchanged slow blinks, and I floated back into the house on a wave of encouragement, and a short time later she proved me right. A chunk of chicken held no allure. She said can't to the canned food, but when I held a lowly bowl of kibbles under her chin, she took a bite, then another, and when she didn't want a third, she consented to lick a gob of tuna off my fingers. That's one end accounted for, and another in working order, I told Linda. Now let's hope the other end still works. As her appetite increased, we began examining her cookie sheet litter box for any evidence of use. No prospector ever scrutinized his pans for grains of gold more closely than we squinted over her litter. A week after her accident, she had regained enough mobility to shift position on her carton-top pillow, but we had never seen her move off of it. Not even an accidental visit from Agnes prompted her to stir. I caught our black cat snuffling around Franny's litter tray after I left the door open to refill her water bowl. Neither cat acted as if she had seen the other, and Agnes scampered back upstairs to resume her second-story exile. Franny may have had a rough and tumble, uncivilized aspects, but she proved to be scrupulous in her bathroom etiquette. Even though she couldn't walk in the middle of the night, she somehow managed to inch herself over to the litter box, use it with the utmost neatness, and crawl back to her pillow again. I doubt that any human being in the entirety of human history had ever been so excited to clean kitty litter as I was the following morning. Well, that ends that particular section of Bob Tart's Kitty Cornered, how Franny and five other incorrigible cats seized control of our house and made it their home. Next time, we'll continue learning about Franny's recovery and how well her pelvis heals in Kitty Cornered. Our next readings come from Best Friends, the November-December 2025 edition. It is the magazine for the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary in Kanab, Utah. Putting her way home, Frankie arrived at Cat World with more than her share of health challenges. Dental disease made eating painful, and skin cancer had damaged her ears. Best Friends veterinarians treated her mouth, which left Frankie with only two teeth, and removed the cancer, reshaping her ears into a rounded teddy bear look that only added to her charm. And while she healed, she rocked a bright yellow sunflower cone. Through it all, Frankie's spirit never dimmed. She purred her way into the hearts of everyone she met, including her adopters, Judy and David Reynolds, just minutes after they first met her. "We were volunteering in Cat World, and she reminded me of my cat who just passed away," said Judy. "I wasn't thinking about adopting at that moment, but then I sat out on the patio and she started rubbing against me. Then my husband sat down and she climbed on his lap right away and started snuggling. The couple knew then and there that they wanted to adopt her. Now she's soaking up the soft breezes in her new home in Florida and purring through every cuddle that comes by." And that article comes from Best Friends, the November-December 2025 edition. The slogan, "Together We Can Save Them All," is from the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary in Kanab, Utah. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of today's readings. I hope you enjoyed them, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our life and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.